Okay, podcasting softly, can't heal, I'm back again. It wasn't until recently I saw something online that I found very, very interesting. Maybe you've seen it, maybe you saw it, maybe you know it. But Mad Max Fury Road, in a couple of different polls, it was rated the greatest Australian film so far of the 21st century. It was voted by a online movie site, IndieWire, as the greatest action film so far of the 21st century. So it just put me in the mind. I thought, yeah, we need to really talk about not only Fury Road, but Mad Max and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, who better than a man who has played the guy, the big baddie, in not only one Mad Max, but two Mad Max movies. He's also the star of many. He's a Australian cinema luminary. He is an Australian Ausploitation legend. He is my guest. He is Immortem Joe. He is Toad. He is the toe cutter. He is Hugh Keysburn. Thank you for being on Podcast Them Softly, Hugh.
Good morning to you, Kent. Good morning, viewers.
Was that good?
All good. All good. I think you've oversold me, really, but it can't be helped.
That's all right.
I mean, one can be a legend in one of those lunchtime.
Well, you're
here we are.
You're a legend.
So, what are we going to talk about, these movies?
Well, I normally go through sort of ones I'm interested in, but Hugh, I wanted to kick off this whole conversation with, I wanted to talk about where I first came to know you as a performer.
Right.
The first thing I ever saw you in, and I'll give you a little hint.
Yep.
WW.
Golly, you see there, WW was a fine sort of chap. He was a developer, prosperous. And he was for progress.
Yeah.
So these are the people that we need. And these are the people that are now in control.
That's true. But for those listeners in the United States, and I'm probably pretty sure everywhere else, what I'm talking about, WW is a character you play called William Whopper, who was...
Yes.
Who was another...
He was a property developer.
Yeah, he was not a bad man.
He was not a bad man. I don't play bad men.
No, you don't. Not at all. You play forward thinkers.
Yes.
Yep. They're all
Renaissance
men, and they're all about the long-term goal.
They are all about the long-term goal, all about stability.
Yes, yes. And some sort of order so we don't have too many people enjoying too much and making it terrible for everyone else.
Yes.
That's right, yeah. Anyway, but the character William Whopper appeared on an Australian TV series that was on TV from 1980 to 1982 on the ABC. It was called Secret Valley. You can look it up online if you're really that interested. But it was a staple for kids of my generation. It was a staple of afternoons after school. And it was one of the shows that was on in the afternoon. So, yes, that was my first encounter with you. You're a very fond one, I must say. Yeah, it was absolutely fabulous. But of course, in most circles, when your name appears, you're talked about in some of the iconic, really, Australian or Ausploitation era pictures, which includes the first Mad Max, the original Mad Max. You were in Stone, Sandy Harbour.
Stone, yes.
Yeah.
I think Stone started it. Stone started a lot of Ausploitation. He's an underestimated fellow, that Sandy Harbour.
Yeah.
He's as mad as a cut snake, but he's a good and decent creature.
Yeah, I mean, that has come on, like, I mean, it's now revered. I mean, he literally was, Sandy, in his day, kind of like an Aussie Orson Welles. You know, he was the auteur, he was the actor, writer, director, everything, really, wasn't he?
Yep. Yeah. He was. Very, one of the starting type of people in that whole time, which was a great time to be here in Oz.
Yeah.
Very good for Oz film in general, Ausploitation. Brian Trenchard-Smith was the next up for me in that whole line.
Yeah, the man from Hong Kong, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a great picture.
He also did a documentary, and that's where I really met him. He was doing a documentary on Stone being made and interviewed us all for that.
Yes. And which is,
so that was good.
Yeah, and it's included on the... there's a lot of DVDs and Blu-rays
nowadays,
of this film. So you can see all these vintage behind the scenes, if you will, little things. Another one up was Mad Dog Morgan.
Mad Dog Morgan, yes. Yeah. That was Moya, Philippe.
Yeah.
Philippe Moya.
What was that like? Did you cross
paths? I was only on that for about a day and a half, maybe two.
So I
just played a bad guy. I just met that lovely actor whose name's gone straight out of my head.
That's all right. But hey, that was probably
Dennis Hopper.
Did you bump into Dennis in that day?
I bumped into Dennis. All right. I was travelling in a taxi on the way to work with Dennis, and he said, "Have you got any drugs?" And I said, I got a bit of hash.
Right.
And he said, "Oh, give us a look at it." And it was a little bit of hash about as big as the top of my thumb.
Right.
And he fucking ate it. So I thought, well, that's charming. But I was interested to see how he went for the rest of the day. He didn't seem to notice.
Right.
So that was good. He sort of went up in my estimation then.
Did he just...
I sort of thought, well, that's good. He's a rigorous sort of chap.
Right. And did he just bite it off your hand, or did he lick it, or...?
Did what?
Did he just bite it, like, lick it off your hand, or...?
Yeah, it looks like a lump of, like an old rubber, you know, a bit dark, and then he just put it in his mouth, ate it.
Yes,
I went like that, too. I went, oh.
Yeah. Well,
I was fucking pissed off.
He was very hardcore, Dennis, wasn't he?
He was pretty hardcore.
I reckon, gee. But not as hardcore as the next man. We jump forward a little bit in time here. The original Mad Max, the Toe Cutter.
The Toe Cutter?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a decent sort of chap.
Yeah, he was very industrious, wasn't he?
Yeah. Don't fuck with the Toe Cutter.
No, not at all.
No.
That first experience in knowing Dr. George then and that, in contrast to the other Mad Max you got to make later on, in contrast, what was that like, that stripped-down production and, you know, people...
Well, Mad Max 1 was like a student film, really.
Right,
It was that sort of scale in terms of the what was available to us in terms of film infrastructure was minimal. Now, that was George Miller absolutely flat out on the edge, as bright as a button, blazing in a sort of really low budget environment.
Yeah.
And the next one, Fury Road, was George Miller as the accomplished filmmaker who had done a massive amount of work from the first one and was incredibly confident and had a massive budget. And that was basically the difference.
Yeah.
George had become a consummate filmmaker, very clever and had all these things.
Yeah. But would you say the George, Dr. George then and Dr. George circa Fury Road still possessed something that you saw in him that first time?
Oh, yes. All he'd done was to get more knowledgeable.
Right, yeah, more experience, obviously.
Yeah, and just more confidence, more everything.
Right, yeah.
So, a joy.
Yeah, totally.
So all of the original sort of daring and all of that was still there very much, but on a whole different level, that's all.
Following sort of Mad Max, you followed along and Steve Beasley followed you into another sort of... What's become
Steve Beasley's the Bronze.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like to talk about them. They're rubbish.
Are they? Okay. I'm sorry.
Well, you don't think the Bronze are rubbish?
The Chain Reaction.
Ah, Chain Reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There was a decent sort of Bisley appeared then.
Right.
Mel was there in the garage.
Was he? Oh, yeah.
Underneath the car. And George Miller was the second unit, well, the stunt unit director for that.
Yes.
And David Brax, who played Mudguts, rolled the hero car day before we used it.
Oh, wow.
And there was a guy called Squeaky, who was a mechanic who had to rebuild the car all night.
Yeah.
He did, of course.
Right. Certainly. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like I was going down somewhere you weren't comfortable going there. Or...
No, don't. No. I'm comfortable down any old barrier.
Alrighty, no worries.
Yeah, no worries.
I'm a rather large fan of Werner Herzog.
Oh, yes, an excellent chap.
And I've been often curious to ask you if I ever got the chance to talk about Where the Green Ants Dream and working with Werner.
Yes, an extraordinary and very pleasant and interesting experience. He's a very, very serious character.
Yes.
He's also... You know, and he came round to the house and said, here's a script, have a look at this, what would you like to do, what would you, blah, blah. And anyway, I ended up, through all sorts of reasons, lending him a belt that I have for the character that he, and then I played a bodyguard. I think I was, you know, only doing a couple of days on that, but he took me down to Melbourne and paid me handsomely and was very sweet and very, a very interesting man to talk to.
Right, I can imagine.
To sit
that.
And be with. And the major theme of the Green Ants Dreaming being somebody who could no longer talk to anybody because there was nobody left alive that spoke his language.
Right, right.
And that was a serious moment, a serious thought.
Totally.
Good stuff.
No, I can imagine. I can imagine just general conversation with Werner Herzog would be incredibly interesting.
It was, and he had a real sort of old-fashioned adventurer's outlook to life.
Yes.
You know, he was constantly walking all over the place. He'd walked from the top of Europe down to Italy.
Yeah.
And done all sorts of things like that, and had an extraordinary pen, which on the back of it, you open up the top, sort of where you'd put the cap on after you'd taken it off.
Right.
And he had in there a sort of little fold-out stamp.
Right.
Which had his name and address on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like tiny little sort of incredible details that were quite fascinating. A fascinating man, and his brother Lukey.
Right.
Who was a very serious man, probably a bit more serious than Werner because he handled the cash.
Right.
But they were incredibly generous. Yeah. They didn't argue about money or anything. They were just very interesting.
Ah, that's great. Mm. Oh, another one I've actually spoken to with someone else who was in this movie. It's called The Blood of Heroes.
Ah, yes. 2086, or was it?
Yeah.
Salute to the Jogger.
It's also
it was called Salute to the Jugger, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
But what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I think I didn't enjoy myself in that. I didn't enjoy the whole environment. I thought I'd sort of mucked up a bit. I can't quite put my finger on what I felt about that, but I felt like I wasn't heavy enough with Rutger Hauer and an offsider that he had. I let him get away with too much.
Did you get to know Rutger at any level? Away?
No, not really. No. He was spent most of his time being filmed by a documentary crew.
Oh, really? Okay.
So he did. Yeah, he was a bit sort of standoffish, really.
Oh, okay, really. Okay.
But you know, he didn't diss me or anything.
He strikes me as a very interesting character.
I think he is.
Yeah.
I think he probably is.
Yeah,
he certainly had a good thing.
And David Peoples is of course well regarded for his gift with the screenplay, but what was he like as a director?
He was pretty good. Yeah. I think probably, I think all around, he was probably a little inexperienced as a director. It felt to me like he wasn't really sure of his of himself, and that might have been Rutger Hauer giving him some, I don't know.
Right.
But it was all good. I mean, there was no awful dramas or anything.
No slap and tickle or that sort of thing. Another thing that you're sort of famous for around the world that people associate you with was the Farscape series.
Yes, Farscape. Now, there was a chap called Grunschlick I played in Farscape.
Yes.
Now, Grunschlick is a chick magnet.
Yes.
And he's a Renaissance man.
Yeah.
And he's another of those men who is a builder rather than a destroyer.
Right, totally.
And the sort of chap that you'd want to have on your side, really.
I think so. Do you feel very close to these gentlemen in your own personal life? Or?
Oh, yes. I do feel very close to them in my personal life. And I take, it's like with the bronze in Mad Max 1.
Right, yeah.
I have no time for them. Every time I have an autograph and there's a picture of any member of the bronze in it, I always write, "The bronze suck," and then I sign it. So even today, I keep that I keep that alive. I like to do that.
Oh well, there you go. That's fantastic. Yeah. But
so just in case anybody missed, the bronze suck.
There you go, folks.
Okay,
you've heard it here, live and exclusive.
You have.
Yeah, there's absolutely no denying that the bronze suck.
And
never the twain shall meet. But
never the twain shall meet.
No. So anyway, come at last to the top of the hill. And as I said at the top of our discussion, Fury Road is being voted in the tops of many, many lists, as they often make lists of movies.
Yes.
They'll be making lists of movies long after they'll be making movies, I'm convinced. But
they'll be making lists of games.
Yeah, eventually. But yeah. It's back in public consciousness. I don't think it ever really left. It was for the second time in his career, and with a character of Mad Max, like when the Road Warrior, as it was known in the States, or Mad Max 2, as we called it, came to the world, it changed the action movie indelibly. And Dr. George, he's older and wiser, but I tell you what, he gives those young action directors a run for their money yet again.
Yes,
he takes us down the Fury Road. And of course, your lovable, endearing, warm-hearted, lovable old cuss of a character, Immortan Joe.
Yes.
He's just a sweetheart. I mean,
absolutely.
I, at many points during the movie, wanted to say, stop, someone give that man a hug. He is such a warm guy.
Yes, give him a good hug.
Yeah.
And give him his wives back.
Yeah, and that's chiefly, I think, all he wanted them around for. A bit of hugs, a bit of support, love,
yep.
You know. Because he's,
exactly.
I mean, he's the ruler of this mass empire. He needs people behind him. He needs the right people behind him.
Indeed.
You know. And what,
you've picked it.
Yeah. And I mean, now, the scale, obviously, as compared to the first Mad Max, would
yes.
be like, you know, trying to have like a 16-course dinner on a picnic blanket. So it's a massive production. You've probably told this story 1,000 times, or you've answered this question 1,000 times. But this is you telling it to me, so it's different in that respect.
Of course it is.
What was the being on the Fury Road, that production? What was it like? What, you know?
It was like winning Lotto.
Yeah.
On one hand, I couldn't believe I was there. I couldn't believe it was happening.
Right.
So all of those things came into play. Also, I was working with a lot of people who were in their 40s,
right.
who were amazed that I was still alive.
Really?
Which was good.
Okay.
Well, they, you know, a lot of youngsters. You can talk to youngsters now about the toe cutter and they look at you like, who?
Yeah.
But if you say Immortan Joe, they might, oh, yeah, all right, that's that.
All right, yeah.
So we had a lot of crew who were in that, I would say, 40-year-old bracket. I mean, they knew who I was.
Yes, right.
But they were saying often, oh, how long ago was that? And I mean, it wasn't 40 years then. It was 35 or something. But it was a majority of their lifetime.
Right, yeah.
And so they were quite impressed about that, and I was loving all that because they really took care of me.
Yeah.
Everybody absolutely took care of me, and that was a wonderful feeling. It was a huge... I was in Africa for, 6 months?
Yes, yeah.
Staying in a beautiful hotel, being looked after and led about like an old man. It was brilliant.
That's fabulous. Were you... It had a mass... I mean, the story of its gestation is just as fascinating as the film itself.
It is.
Were you always on Dr. George's list? Or?
I'm never sure.
Oh, right.
But I gather from other people that I was included early on in the thinking for Fury Road. So I have that
good
knowledge.
Solid word, yeah.
Mm, yeah, people were just saying, oh, yes, well, George was talking about you at X time or Y time.
Right.
Well, usually you don't hear that stuff as an actor.
No.
But because of the you know, background and history and all of that sort of thing.
Sure,
and all
yeah.
sort of
yeah.
yeah, so that was lovely.
Because it really was probably one, or if not the best, as it's fashionable today for the to remake or do sequels or prequels or reboots of old movies. It kind of is that, and a very good version of that, but also something different.
Yes. You
know?
Yeah. I was very taken with it when I saw it. I wasn't expecting it to be so complete, so polished, so.
Yeah.
Shiny and chrome.
Exactly. But it's just like, I mean, there are young filmmakers today, very young, and here's Dr. George, you know, God love him, that whole time in that leather jacket that he wore out in the desert. I heard he never took it off, or at least no one saw him with it off.
I've seen him with it off.
Oh, you saw him with it off? Oh, that... I knew that had to be a bit cheapy, that story.
No, it's not. He had that.
Yeah.
He had that jacket on.
Because I watched an interview with him. He said he likes to wear the same thing like a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, he has like jumpers and stuff that he just wears all the time.
Yes, and I sort of quite sympathise with that.
Right, do you do that too? Do you have like a shirt?
Yeah, probably.
Do you have like
but George and I are very much in love.
Oh, that's good.
We've had good times together.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and we also went through all sorts of ups and downs after the first one.
Oh, sure.
And that was all good.
Yeah.
And now it's even better. So we've had good fun. He has the most extraordinary amount of, determination and endurance.
Yes.
I have never seen anyone. It was beyond me because I wasn't working when I was in Africa filming. I was just hanging about and flopping out about every once a week or something. And there was George Miller, 5 o'clock every fucking morning, out there doing it. Dust, whatever.
Yeah.
Remarkable. I couldn't believe he was doing it. Every time I saw him, I'd yell greetings and salutations and tell everybody who was in the earshot what an incredible.
I think it's always fascinating how much more vital some of these really accomplished filmmakers become as they get older.
Oh yeah.
Like you think about Kurosawa directing something like Ran in his 80s. And it's a massive battle sequence, and there's this little old man sitting on his little old stool, and he's not yelling. There's no one yelling.
Right.
He gets up and he talks to the director of photography. He says, "Are we right to go? Good." And he just says, "All right." And then it all goes. You know.
Yeah.
And George strikes me that because I mean he's got such a that beautiful bedside manner voice like a doctor.
He has. He isn't like a doctor. He is a doctor.
Yeah. Like a doctor. Yes, Dr. George. But Dr. George. I actually met him once. I actually met him once very briefly in Melbourne many years ago. He was at the traffic lights down near the casino.
Right.
And just from the back, like I only saw him from behind.
You knew.
Yeah, it was distinctive. And then he turned around and he had that, he used to wear that all the time. He had a little tie or something that had 3 chilies on it.
Oh, yes. Yes, that was a shirt.
Yeah. And
was it 3 chilies or 4?
I think it was 3.
Okay.
It was 3, yeah. It might have been 4. But, from where I was
standing. It was hot anyway.
Yeah. And I just, without thinking, not tapping him on the shoulder, I just yelled out, "Dr. George!" And he turned around. And he goes, "Hi, hi, how's it going?" You know, very soft.
Yeah.
And I just said, "Oh, look, I don't want to stalk you or anything or disturb you. I don't know where you're going. I just wanted to shake your hand just to say I did it." And he said, "Oh, no, that's fine." But,
That's good, isn't it?
So it was a jolly old moment for me.
Yeah.
Just as it has been a jolly old moment. Oh, what a lovely day it's been. To talk to my very, very special cinematic icon guest, player of the most wonderful, heartwarming characters in cinema history. He's Hugh Keysburn. Hugh, thank you for talking with me on Podcast Them Softly.
That's good. It Podcast Them Softly. It's not killing them softly, is it?
No,
it's podcasting softly.
It was. I believe. I didn't start it. I'm just. I don't make these decisions. I just work here.
Fair enough.
Yeah. No. Apparently, the founders were very fond of that Brad Pitt film, Killing Them Softly.
Right.
And when they were thinking of a movie themed call their podcast, they said, "Well, why not podcast them softly?" So I don't dislike the movie. I mean, I thought it was a little bit slow in places. I personally would have, I don't know, brainstormed it a bit more. But we like it. We live with it, and we're happy to have had you on it today, sir.
Good. Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank
All
you for
right.
letting us
Rock
ride.
Rock on, everybody. Take care.
Thank you for letting us ride with you into Valhalla.
And drive fast and dangerously.
That's right. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Have a lovely day.